And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of WARP in Cincinnati. Paul Diener Jr. and C. Trent Rosecrans of The Athletic. Just to let you know, we actually knocked out a full episode of WARP, which you are going to hear soon, but we did that before the awful news today of Joe Morgan passing away at the age of 77. And we wanted to take a few minutes to make sure we discussed that today. And then we'll bring you the podcast that we recorded earlier right after that. Trent, first thoughts on Joe Morgan.
You know, it's one of those things. I mean, we talk later in this episode about the weirdness of being in this business. But one of the other things that's weird is when you think of Joe Morgan and you think of, oh, yeah, I remember, you know, his golf cart at spring training and sitting there talking to Joe for a while and, you know, like personal things. It's so strange. I remember that with Joe Nuxhall that, like, I never had that kind of the fan because I'm not from Cincinnati. Like, I knew Joe Nuxhall the person before I knew Joe Nuxhall the broadcaster, which was really odd. I, of course, knew Joe Morgan the player before I knew Joe Morgan the person. What just gets to me, I mean, there's so many things. I really enjoyed talking to Joe, and every spring it would seem like there would be a point where I would get a chance to just sit and talk to Joe for half hour, 45 minutes. And it was always just really, really great. Cause I mean, this was just a brilliant man, especially on the game of baseball and everything that he brought to it. But then when you look at Joe, the baseball player, there is an argument that he is the greatest Red of all time. It sounds kind of crazy because he was only here for 8 years.
But those 8 years.
It's kind of funny to discuss Joe Morgan and war because as a broadcaster, he was kind of skeptical of war. But I don't think he was as close-minded as most people seem to think he was about it. And I say that because I've had conversations with Joe Morgan about war and how it is kind of formulated and what it shows. And we've talked about this, and I think there was more leniency or willingness to learn from Joe than what most people saw, what I saw in person and what our discussions were. I think he got it. But the thing that's always been funny when discussing Joe Morgan in war is that there is no statistic that seems to value Joe Morgan more than war that says, holy crap, this guy was so, so good. I'm sure this will be up on our site prominently, places to look at it. But Joe Posnanski did when he did the Baseball 100, the 100 greatest players of all time, and he had Joe Morgan number 21. He from 1972 to 1976, Joe Morgan led the league in war five of those years. And that other year, he was second with an 8.6 war, which, like, 8 war is MVP level. Like, if you have 8 war in a regular season, 162-game season, you're the MVP or you should have been or somebody else was really freaking good. 75 and 76. 75, he had an 11 war season, which is ludicrous.
It's absurd, yeah.
So I did this, and this is just a real basic thing, and I tweeted it, or as we record, I'm about to tweet it, but when you have listened, you have recorded. And this is something that's just like real basic math, but I think over the course of, like, it's absurd for like a one season to be like, this guy was, you know, had this many wins above replacement per game. But when you're looking at something like this, where Joe Morgan is sixth all time in WAR for Reds position players, the guys, I mean, in order from 1 to 5 in WAR, career WAR as a Red, this is just in a Reds uniform, are Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, Barry Larkin, Frank Robinson, and Joey Votto. Those are the only guys ahead of him. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But Joe Morgan played in 1,154 games as a Cincinnati Red. Of that list, you have to add 348 games to get to the next player, and that's Frank Robinson.
Yeah.
And so basically I did a thing where it's just like simple, you know, meatball math, which is really kind of where I am for much of this. But if you go for baseball WAR per game, or B WAR, baseball reference WAR. I used baseball reference because it's prettier than Fangraphs. But if you go for WAR per game, his is so much higher than any of those other guys.
Yeah. Well, we talk about the Big Red Machine and the greatest team of all time potentially, and certainly, you know, this reign of those great teams. He was the MVP of the league for 75 and 76.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. On that team, the team of greats, the great eight, we talk in reverence, as you should, about so many players from that team around here and everywhere. Joe Morgan was the guy on that team. He won the MVP of the league both of those years. And often when we talk about Hall of Famers and careers and judging them, and you get into this when you talk about fringe Hall of Fame candidates or who should be or who shouldn't be, we often end up in debates that are about prime versus longevity. And it's right. Like, oh, what's more valuable? Is it the peak or is it the fact you did it over a long period of time? What if you did both? Joe Morgan at his peak was as good as anything this team has seen. Again, MVP both years they won the World Series of those Big Red Machine teams. And then he's OPS plussing in the 130s and the over 100 every year until he's 40. Mm-hmm. I mean, This is not some did it for a little while. He did it at a high level in his prime, and he did it at a high level for an extended period of time. Again, 10-time All-Star, 5-time Gold Glove, All-Star MVP, 2-time MVP, 2 times World Series. He's done, did it all, and he played, you know, the dude stole 689 bases. On top of all of this,
and was like percentage is successful stolen base percentage was in the 80s.
Yeah,
I mean he was. Yeah, it's astounding. It's astounding what he did. You know, when you kind of look at that, when we're talking about pound for pound and all that, you know, you just go back to him and Frank Robinson. You just look at their numbers and they're just phenomenal. These two are, you know, forget any team. They're some of the greatest of all time. And here, actually, now that I'm kind of looking through this. So we talked about, I just said something about Joe Morgan was second with an 8.6 WAR in 1974. And so that was the second. How many, let's see. How many 8 WAR seasons do you think that Johnny Bench had?
I don't know. How many?
One.
One.
How many eight war seasons do you think Pete Rose had?
Two.
One. How many eight war seasons do you think Frank Robinson had?
Two.
One. How many eight war seasons do you think Barry Larkin had?
One.
Zero. How many eight war seasons do you think Joey Votto's had?
One.
One.
Yes.
So
that perspective is incredible.
I didn't do it until, I mean, I just did this all here. Eight war seasons. And Joe Morgan. I mean, forget that. Joe Morgan had an 11. Yeah. None of those guys had a nine war season. He had an 11. He had two. In 72, he had a 9-3. In 73, he had a 9-3. He had nine. His from 1972 to 1976, his lowest war season in those 5 years was 8.6. He had four seasons where he had a better than nine war.
It's crazy.
Four.
Yeah, it's crazy. An absolute legend. I hope people understand that, you know, how revolutionary he really was as a player. You know, you get into these guys and, you know, as baseball players, particularly great baseball players, maneuver through their post baseball life, and Joe Morgan did that incredibly well. I mean, him and John Miller, that's Sunday Night Baseball, man. Like, that mm-hmm. was forever. And a lot of people, a generation of fans, know him as that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's Joe Morgan. Yeah, he was a broadcaster. Yeah, no, he's also like one of the greatest players of all time. Like, you know, let's not let, but for some people, they don't, you know, understand that of how great he truly was, and, you know, the greatest player on one of the greatest teams in the history of baseball.
Yeah, it's just silly.
It's crazy. And sad day, man. Sad day. You know, rest in peace and condolences to Joe Morgan and his family and everybody. As you know, this news gets out. But, you know, a great guy. We had it went back a while back when I worked in the Reds scoreboard. There was a day, I think he was the chairman of, he was leading the opening day parade or something like that. And he's one of the people who's ever done this, came into the scoreboard room as we were working on opening day and made sure to say hello and thank you to everybody that was working inside of the scoreboard. And it's like, that was just not something that happened. And it's like, oh, Joe Morgan just came in here to say thank you to us. Like, that's pretty wild, you know? And we're normally a forgotten corner of the, it used to be a forgotten corner of the offices up there where you don't normally see that. And it was very cool. I always remembered that. It's one of the few times I actually got to see Joe Morgan. You know, there's millions of stories of him as a person, as well as obviously an incredible baseball player. Sad day for Reds fans and for baseball fans and everybody, really. So anyway, we wanted to make sure we put that reaction in and we'll now get to the rest of the podcast. But rest in peace, Joe Morgan, one of the greats of all time. Trent, last week you teased us with the thought that There could be some news that we would be reacting to next week, potentially. You might have even used the word secrets.
Did I?
Well, there is news.
Yeah, Dick Williams stepped down.
Yeah.
It was kind of surprising to me. I mean, at a certain point, news becomes the news and your mind adjusts to it and you have a better understanding of why. But at first glance, first hearing it brought to your attention, was that as surprising for you as it was for some others?
Yeah. There was some just... When I talked to Dick, it was like, oh, really? You know, kind of thing. There was a lot of... It was surprising. But talking to him, I get it. I really do. I mean, it's hard for a lot of people, I think, to understand. Because for so many people, it's like, oh, working in sports would be so great. And it is. I don't think you and I are complaining. We both love our jobs. But our wives sometimes don't. Sometimes we don't, you know. Yeah. We have weird work schedules. It's all encompassing. Like we were just talking off air about how, you know, you get your phone's never off. And I mean, again, not a complaint. I do what I do. I love what I do. I don't know what else I would do. But your phone's never off. And that's just for me. For if you're in the position that Dick Williams is in, it is. You know, it is 24/7 and it is a lot. It is really a lot. And he's got 4 kids under the age of 11.
Wow.
I mean, you have 2, and I don't know how people do it with 2. Now, you know, Dick's also, there's, you know, the other elephant in the room here. I mean, he's not wondering where rent's coming from.
He's going to another very good job.
Yeah, he's got another job. You know, he's got familial connections. He's got other stuff. So it's not like, you know, like you and me, I think we both kind of have the thing like, what else would we do? How else would we make money? How would we do this? I have no other real skills.
I can bartend, like, but I wasn't really good at it.
Right.
That's right.
That's all. And I that got. Also is not great for the, you know, helping out the family thing.
No. It's hard. I mean, it's hard with the, you know, when you have, you know, that is the thing is, and he mentions it, you know, you're looking at 180 days and nights a year, basically, that you are at a ballpark and away from your family. And when you have young kids and you've been doing, and that's been you for however many years, there's an unsustainable nature to it. And, you know, I don't know how, like, I see the same thing. Zach Taylor has four kids.
Right.
And you see these, and I'm always like, I don't understand how anybody does that. Working in sports and being in that type of position was like the greatest thing ever before you had responsibility outside of it, you know, real responsibility. And it just is draining and exhausting and full of guilt when you do have responsibility, particularly when you have young kids like Dick Williams does.
And you and I mean, right. Yeah. And Luke Fickell has like 73 children.
Yeah. Something about coaches in this area must breed.
you know, it's crazy. And like, so I get it. And like, there are just, when you have other options, and I think that's the big one, and there's other family stuff, and you never know. It is something, and Sick said he had went to Bob Castellini in August and said, hey, we're going to be in the playoffs, but I don't think I'm coming back. We're going to make it. And he was right on both, and he kind of slept on it, gave itself more than a month, and decided last week that he just wasn't He didn't want to come back and didn't want to keep this up. And again, I know everybody else says, oh, he got fired. He really got fired, right? Like, I don't think so. No. You know, it just, because for a lot of people, it doesn't make sense. But I think for some people, it really does.
Yeah. There's an immediate thought that there must have been some sort of, you know, dissension under the surface that we didn't know about, and this is that coming out, and I don't necessarily get that. I definitely don't get that impression. And I think there's also a little bit of, when you look at the job he did and the way he evolved in that job and turning things over to Nick Kroll and feeling like he wanted to set something that would live past his time there, the modernization of the team, the restructuring of the player development system, where you get into the, you know, the analytics side of things with Kyle Boddy and things like that, feeling like you set all those pieces in place, and then you can walk away and just watch those, as you would hope, blossom from the seeds you planted, so to speak. And you don't need to be there to be watering the plants every day, to keep my bad analogy going. You know, it's like, yeah, I think there is some sense of, well, what else can I really do here that everybody else isn't already doing because we put that in place and got the balls in motion everywhere.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you kind of hit on it. Bigger than any of maybe some of the big player acquisitions or those kind of trades or whatever, I think the largest legacy might be that restructuring and the modernization. And, you know, that's something that he had wanted to do for quite a while before he was in charge. It was really kind of what he was hoping to do and something he thought was important and really spearheaded. So, I mean, that's quite the legacy.
Yeah, and you can, you know, and we'll see what happens with that. I mean, potentially that ends up being the big difference maker. What did you, if we're playing this game that you must play if you talk about sports into a microphone, what was his best move? What do you think was, is it the modernization thing? I mean, we haven't seen that come to roost yet. You have a couple of trades and signings that have proven to be very good. Did you have a best move from him?
I think, you know, it's kind of that modernization is something that we shall see, and maybe that's the legacy. But if you're looking at moves, his first trade is tough to beat. Getting Luis Castillo, you know, and trading for Luis Castillo.
Dan Straley and who else was in that deal?
Well, Dan Straley went to the Marlins. Luis Castillo, Austin Bryce, and Zeke White came to the Reds.
Yeah. Decent deal. Worked out.
You know, I think you can really look at the Sonny Gray sign, trade and an extension. That's, you know, that's a pretty big deal that should, you know, pay dividends down the line.
What about Derek Johnson?
That's a huge one.
That was mine. I think I remember specifically talking to you after they did it, and where that was the one that sent the shockwave through the league of this. The Reds are serious about this. They are real about this. And I think he has been a big part of all those you just mentioned. Revitalization of Sonny Gray, the modernization of the pitching staff, Luis Castillo, all of those things in a lot of ways go back to Derek Johnson. It was a big move to aggressively go after him from a division rival, no less, steal him away and understand the importance of what he could bring.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. That is one of those that was the, you know, all these moves are the work of more than one person. And I think that's something that gets lost and is sometimes oversimplified. These are moves that are pushed by or talked about by so many people. So, it's definitely kind of a culture that was built and has been built and that frankly still exists.
And they hope will, you know, come to blossom. It didn't make it all the way this year, you know, to where he talked about that, where he looks at 2012 and 2020 as two of those most disappointing seasons in a lot of ways, because you felt like you had the team and you had the horses to make the real run, both of them and before ever moving forward. And you're frustrated by that. But, you know, you feel like you've left a base where there can be more teams like that going forward. Let's take a quick break here now and hear from one of our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Where do they go from here, or is that just a big unknown at this point? What do we actually know about what the dynamic will be in the front office now going forward?
We don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the bottom line. We just don't know. And
I mean, Nick Kroll is still here, and he has been central to running the day-to-day regular operations as the GM for over a year now. A year and a half, has it been?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long it's exactly.
It was
been.
Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, well, he's been doing that. So that part doesn't change.
Unless you bring in somebody who wants all his own people. I mean, you know, if you or do you elevate Nick or do you do that? There's so many different ways that they can go with this.
And we don't know what those ways will be.
No.
I mean, you would think that there would be some wanting to keep continuity together from a lot of the things that we just talked about, and not necessarily wanting to go way outside of the realm of comfort. And to me, that would suggest having Nick Kroll kind of have another person underneath him rather than bringing somebody in over top of Nick Kroll. Now, I don't know anything about those dynamics like you do. But from an outsider's perspective, looking in, hey, wouldn't that make sense? It would seem to me you would want to keep a lot of the momentum and things that you had going and maybe bringing in somebody to work with Nick Kroll to help lighten the load at that level.
It's a possibility. I think everything's kind of on the table. And this is something that the ownership group, I mean, Dick did give them a heads up. So it's something that they've been considering for a while.
Here's the other side of this. I always thought there was an advantage in Dick Williams because of his connection to the ownership group. I mean, he's part of the ownership group, and that was, you know, I think part of the allure there a little bit in that connection. Is there relevancy to that going forward, do you think, at all, or is that totally just, well, that was just a unique situation?
I mean, there is something there. I mean, you know, when it comes down to it, ownership can sign off on a lot of deals. There's a lot of deals that can be, you know, are bantied about, can be agreed upon, and then ownership say no to. You have to be able, a big part of that job is communicating with ownership and being able to sell ownership on things, and or talk them out of other things. So there is, I think there's a lot to what you said, and I've always kind of thought that. I mean, that's not to say that Dick always got what he wanted, because that is certainly not the case, and I don't think that's the case for anybody in that position. You know, this is not a, I hear it talked about sometimes as a Reds problem or something. It's like, you know, most of these things that we see are part of the sport everywhere. You know, every person in that position. It's so weird because we used to call it GM, and it's still like GM is still the shorthand for it, but it's not actually, you know, that's a tangent. But it's going back to what I was saying before I kind of veered off. I hope I didn't lose everybody, yourself included. But like every GM in sports or president of whatever operations or whatever title you want to give, whatever top person on the baseball side or the sports side is always dealing with ownership. And that is their first constituency, and that is the first person they have to sell on anything. And everybody deals with that. I don't know that there is a owner in sports that, I mean, I'm sure there are, but it's far more common that owners in sports are probably involved more than the decision makers would like them to be.
I'm sure that's a fact. I mean, so much of these jobs, maybe this is just me and I could be wrong, but like until I really got into our business and really got a good understanding of how these teams operate, the importance of managing up never occurred to me until I really started covering the league and seeing the inner workings of it. And that
we
focus, I think outsiders often focus so much on the managing down and managing your players and situations, and managing up is like probably 75% of your job security, and your ability to really get things done. And some are very good at that. Some are very bad at that. And that typically ends up defining their tenure more so than any of the managing down that they do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and that was the best part. That was the thing with Dick Williams. He had managing up in his back pocket because he's managing up to him, you know, his own people in a lot of ways. I mean, he was part of that group. You have that built in.
Right. And, you know, it's not, this is someone he's known his entire life. And it's not, I don't know. I think there are some people who are scared of ownership. And, you know, Dick's a blue blood. And it's easier for blue bloods to deal with blue bloods because they feel like they belong.
Yeah. So we don't know exactly what's going to happen next. How time frame, is that also unknown? Do they feel this is an urgent matter to fill in immediately, or do we have any idea?
No, I don't. Yeah.
There's a lot of still stuff just sort of reactionary to this, I think, is where we're at, and we'll see what develops going forward. Of course, we'll be here with you as things go through at that point. But for right now, you know, Nick Kroll is still in the GM spot, and anything that's going to be going on from an off-season perspective, they still have, you know, it's not like there's a bunch of empty offices.
Yeah. Although this off-season's going to be so weird and so different.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. We're going to see throughout baseball, you know, something to look at are the non-tenders. There's going to be some very surprising non-tenders out there this year, just because that's going to be the only way to save money.
Yeah.
And so you're going to see guys that you go, oh man, that every other year, that is a no-brainer.
So who would be some of the Reds? I mean, they have non-tender candidates, I assume, here.
Oh yeah. I mean, pretty much everybody who's arbitration eligible. So let's go through that. That would be Archie Bradley. You know, he's third year arb. He came in. Brian Goodwin, another guy in that trade, that day of trades. Kurt Casale is arbitration eligible. Travis Jankowski, I think that's going to be a non-tender. Matt Davidson, also a non-tender. Robert Stevenson could be non-tendered. It's his first year of arb, so maybe not. Jesse Biddle's probably non-tendered. Matt Bowman could be non-tendered. He's arb too. Even Michael Lorenzen could be non-tendered. He's, you know, that's a guy that I think they would consider just because he's another year of arbitration. He's been good, but, you know, if he made 3.725 last year, say ARB gives him five, do you consider $5 million, what he does worth $5 million? I mean, that's just a thrown out number, but it's a consideration. I think yeah, those are all considerations. And, you know, there are just a ton of guys out there. You go through, and I mean, I've heard speculation. Again, this is speculation, but I've heard this from people inside the game. Chris Bryant could be an untendered.
Yep.
Chris Bryant, you know, Gary Sanchez could be non-tendered. Heck, I even had somebody, again, somebody inside the game, say Javier Baez. I mean, that's the kind of level things, guys, that are going to be around. And so even then, if you're expecting that kind of non-tender, well, then you look at the people that you need to tender a contract to and say, oh, am I going to go through ARB with this guy, or can I pick up somebody on a cheaper one-year contract? Because there's going to be a lot of one-year contracts, I think, this year, because everybody's going to want to because the market is so different, because it is all over the place. There's going to be a lot of that with people just feeling out what it may be. And I mean, it's also super interesting. Because there is just so much in play with those contracts. And this offseason is going to be unlike anything we've ever seen. I honestly don't expect many signings before January 1st because everybody's got to know that, A, they're going to play, or maybe that they're going to, you know, not only are they going to play, how many games they're going to play, if it's going to be a regular season, if there's going to be fans, you know, what you can budget for.
Yeah. It will be, I mean, it's like all these, I think we've talked so much about the uniqueness of these professional seasons, NBA, NHL, and the bubbles, you know, NFL and MLB trying to pull off outside, all that stuff. The fascinating stuff is what's going to happen next, because that's when the money doesn't show up, mm-hmm, and the bills come due. And then what do these leagues, what do these owners do? That's across every single professional sport that has gone without fans this year, is how do they react in the coming offseason, in the next offseasons? How do the leagues adjust? That is going to be really the telling stuff. And for baseball, you know, it will, you know, they still got to think about what next year is going to even look like on the field. You know, there's just a lot there. All right, Trent, I'm just going to take a quick stop here, and let's hear from a sponsor. there is a fantastic story up on Dusty Baker on the site right now. And Trent, you know, anybody that covered the Reds during Dusty's time, he's just the best.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, again, it's one of those inside the game things. People love Dusty.
Yeah. And if you've ever had a conversation with the guy or met him, I mean, there's nothing not to love. He's baseball's version of the most interesting man in the world.
Yeah. The guy in the commercials got nothing on Dusty.
No. That goes back to when you guys had Joey Votto on the podcast with Paz, and he told the story about going to talk to Dusty, and Willie Mays was in there, and the conversation that Willie Mays had about the size of Joey Votto's hands or whatever. But it's just like, and Votto said it in passing, but he's like, you know, you could go into Dusty's office and you never know who could be in there or who he's talking about, or he'll call up or whatever. It's just like, that's just Dusty. Like, there is nothing off the table in the whole world that you could, you know, you would be surprised by in Dusty's office.
Well, and that's the funny thing. I think somebody said it in there, and it's like, you go in one day and there's two chains, and then the next day Willie Nelson walks out.
Right. Yeah, it's just awesome. So the story is incredible, but in the background is that I want to talk briefly about the playoffs and get your take on the remaining teams. You know, for Dusty, this has just been the one knock against him, right? Has mm-hmm. been, but he's done everything. He has won consistently every single place he's been. He's made it every single place he's been, but just never been able to knock down the door completely. And here he is with these hated Astros doing his thing, and he's got them in the ALCS against the Rays.
What's funny about it to me is, like, for people who haven't paid much attention, you know, the people who just are in the playoffs, they probably think the Astros should win that just on name recognition, you know, like, oh, it's the Astros and the underdog Rays, the underdog Rays who were 40-20 and the Astros had a losing record this year. You know, the Astros were 29-31. The Rays were 40-20, the second best record in baseball. And it's just kind of funny because I think a lot of casual fans would see, like, oh, well, there goes Dusty underachieving. you know, with a pitching staff that has been decimated, both starters and relievers. You know, who'd you see out there last night but Brooks Raley in the eighth for the Astros? You know, a guy that the Reds designated for assignment early in the season. Now, Raley is a guy that was on the Astros radar for quite a while. So they valued him and kind of thought that the Reds didn't use him right. But, you know, still, it's a guy that the Reds DFA'd, was out there in the eighth inning last night with a game on the line. And that's kind of been the story of the Astros season. Yet here they are in the ALCS. I mean, you could argue that this team that was 29-31 is overachieving to be there.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to watch. I mean, the Rays are a great story too. I mean, I always just feel like they, I don't know, from afar, and I knowing them a little bit when I lived down in the South a little bit more, I love the way they run their organization. They just have always, I feel like they're always getting the most out of what they have. They're always taking very smart angles, whether it would be in the front office or managerial, whatever. They always have just felt a step ahead. And, you know, so I'm not surprised to see them back where they are in the AL.
Here's something that I think isn't talked about enough with them. Big part of their success is kind of like what I was just talking about, that they don't have that external pressure. You know, nobody expects anything out of them. They don't have to cave to the local columnist saying, why don't you sign big free agents? You know, they don't have to deal with the perception of they're not trying. They're just the Rays, and people don't think about them, and they don't get that. I don't know. I see a lot of things, you know, like the last couple of years, oh, they're, you know, they'll never sign anybody in free agency. That's what I got last year. I wrote around this time this big story, what would a free agent spending spree look like? And the responses every got, they won't ever do that. And but also pressuring to do that and thinking that's the only way. Like, just they're allowed to do what they want. You know, so much isn't that they're they are just one of the best run organizations out there. And there's, I don't think you can dispute that. But I think a big part of that is that they're allowed to do it their way. And kind of what we were talking about before, that managing up, they are allowed to do that in part because of there's not that much external pressure. I mean, you know, the other best team in baseball is the best team with the best record in the National League, and the team that I think we all expect to win there is the Dodgers. And that's the old Rays, you know? That's the first successful Rays with Andrew Friedman and his whole group. And so there they are too.
And they win differently too.
And they win differently too because of
they can spend.
But they can, and they have that. I don't. Yeah, they can go out and sign Mookie Betts for $300 million or whatever.
That helps.
That helps. But it's also, you know,
the Yankees aren't here.
The Yankees aren't here. You know, there's all these things, and you know, for everything I hear around here, you know, the Dodgers haven't. The Reds have won a World Series more recently than the Dodgers, and the Rays have never won one.
Yeah, you know, it's
for the people like the Rays.
Yeah,
they're the same people crying who say when they get to the playoffs that they didn't win in the playoffs.
Yeah,
or be like the A's. You know, the same thing. It's a complete lack of understanding what you're talking about.
And I've always liked their organization. You just feel like they're always there and always doing something interesting. On the flip side, I do want to go ahead, Trent.
I do that. You know, there's always the, like, a Rays move or an A's move. And quite honestly, I think the Brewers have kind of gotten into this just because I think so much of their organization where it's like, I'm not sure I get it. But they know better than I do. Yeah. You know, they earned the benefit of the doubt. The A's and the Rays have really earned the benefit of the doubt on any of those moves. That you kind of go, huh, that's interesting. And it's not looking like – it's looking like, what do they see that I don't? Because they see it, and they're usually right.
On the other side, the NLCS, the Braves and Dodgers are going against each other. The Braves continued to look good after moving on to beat the Reds. For those that checked out, you know, they've got it going pretty nicely. But do you give them a fighting chance? I mean, you just said you think the Dodgers are, you know, should win it.
Yeah.
Give them. I mean, they still can rake.
Yeah. I mean,
Max Fried.
Yeah. I mean, I think they've, you know, when you get to this point, anybody can win. I really believe that. And so, but I'm still going chalk Rays Dodgers because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Selfishly, because I always root for what will make angry Twitter the most mad. I want Dusty to get his.
I want
and
Dusty
he, and you just want him to win anyway.
I love
for a number of reasons. Great. That's one of them. it's good for baseball. You're right.
And it just, you know, Dusty's one of my favorite people. He is. I think I've said this, and we kind of alluded to it. Other, the thing with Dusty is, you could spend an entire day or weekend or week or whatever. Set your time frame. You could spend all that time with Dusty, have the greatest conversations of your life, and never talk about baseball.
Yeah.
And, or you could only talk about baseball, spend all that time and have the greatest conversations of your life and only talk about baseball. Yeah. I mean, the guy, I don't think this word was used in there, but I've heard it many times. He's a chameleon. You know, everybody... He finds that he deals with, he finds what he can do to connect with them. And he's a connector. And that is why he is one of the greatest managers ever, because he connects with everybody and he can connect with anybody. He's unbelievable.
Yep. And it's why teams that play for him love playing for him. They love coming to work every day. They feel like their manager has their back. They feel like they have good relationships with him. And that's why they win over the course of 162, because that's the key. It's like that he knows how to create that connection of happiness and support and all those things you need for all your players over the course of 162. He hasn't been able to get over the top in the postseason, but it's fun to watch, and you just hope that he gets that chance.
Yeah, is Billy Beane a Hall of Famer? The GM.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
Yeah. Do you think he's a Hall of Famer?
I mean, they haven't won anything.
Right, but I think he's a Hall of Famer.
Right, for his impact on the game.
Yeah. I don't get to vote on the managers or executives, and that's all a different thing. But
yeah,
Dusty's a no-brainer to me. I'm afraid it's going to be a little tougher, but it shouldn't be.
If he can win one, it's a little easier.
If he wins one, I mean, he's in. Like, you know, like Theo Epstein. When Theo, I just remember tweeting when Theo won, it's like, yep. With the Cubs, it was like, you know, as if there were a doubt after what he did with the Red Sox, doing it with the Cubs. I mean, shoot, do they rename an award for him? I mean, like, what's next for him? So, because somebody said that, well, the Reds should get Theo Epstein. Well, A, I don't know why he would do that unless he got ownership stake. I mean, that's the only thing that would maybe work there. But B, it's like for him, like I always wondered, like after he won the Cubs title, it's like, what's next? I mean, seriously, what's next?
Yeah.
What are the other biggest, like, I mean, do you turn around? I don't know. I just can't even think of it. I can't think that big. It's got to go beyond sport, right? If you've won with the Red Sox and the Cubs, you have to, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a brand that's, you know, do you bring Arby's. Back Sears?
That'd be great if that was the next move.
Yeah.
Bring Searsy back. All right. On that note, I think we've run the gamut here. Reminder, again, that story on Dusty Baker is up on the site now. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Great jobs by Rustin Dodd and Brittany Giroli. Really, really fun reading. And Joey Votto's in there, Brandon Phillips, Bronson Arroyo. It was great. I talked to Joey for that story, but I also hooked Rustin up with Bronson, and Rustin texts me right back and goes, "Oh my God, thank you so much." Like, yeah.
Yeah, Bronson, he'll do that for you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
he'll make you thankful and grateful.
Speaking of all-time greats to deal with in this job.
So we'll be back again next week on WRP, and a little more look at the offseason. We'll take maybe even a little more look at what's going on in the playoffs, everything else, and maybe there'll be more news. I don't know. We'll see. You never know what's going to happen. So anyway, thanks to everybody for listening. A reminder, subscriptions on the site. You can go to theathletic.com/WARP and go ahead and click on the link and subscribe. We'd love to have you on board. It's a great deal. Free trial is also out there for you if you want to just come take a test spin. Hope to have you there. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on WARP in Cincinnati. Woo-hoo.